Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week of February 17th. We'll start on this sunny day with the As We See It column, as we usually do. The Gilman Old Boys and Girls 2021 reunion has been set for August 12th through 15th. This week's winter storm was one of the worst we have seen for a few years, but not the worst to be experienced in this area. The Gilman Star issue of February 3, 1977, carried a number of stories about the worst storm in memory, which was 44 years ago. The front page of that issue carried a photo by Danforth native John Merkel, showing Alan Zedek standing on top of a 25-foot drift with his snowmobile, with his arm resting on the crossarm of a telephone pole along US 45. The storm actually took place the last week of January with gale force winds of up to 50 miles per hour, and it made a mess for travelers. On the Wednesday night in question, 84 travelers found refuge at Gilman High School. From Thursday through Saturday night, approximately 200 more were accommodated, including three busloads of students from the University of Illinois en route back to Champaign from Chicago. Clifton accommodated 80 at the school and 31 at Central Hospital. Buckley had about 100. Figures for those stranded at Ashcombe were conflicting, ranging all the way from 30 to 200. Northbound lanes of I-57 were opened about 9:30 a.m. Sunday, and southbound lanes were not opened until that afternoon. And US 45 between Gilman and Danforth wasn't opened until Monday. Some of the stories from the storm. An Ashcombe man and a 17-year-old boy were stranded in the storm from Friday at 2:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. when the boy walked 2 miles to Clifton. They had burned every available item in the cab to keep warm. They both had frostbitten feet and hands. A Gilman man was stranded 14 hours, 1.5 miles south of Ashcombe in a state snowplow when the truck's gears froze and left him stranded. Another Gilman man, also in a state snowplow, was stranded in a farm home near Ashcombe when the plow got stuck on Illinois 49 near Larrabel. He had no food and was rationing fuel. We are asked from time to time if we pay the people who author some of the opinion articles that appear in the Star 3 or 4 times per month, and the answer is no. As a small country weekly, we could not afford to, but we greatly appreciate the fact that they are willing to share their thoughts and put in the time to do so. We do get some feedback from readers regarding the opinions these writers offer. Some as critical, some as supportive, and one letter we received a few weeks ago said that they were happy that we were able to offer divergent schools of thought in a small paper. But we welcome the feedback from readers. We also appreciate the columns Jim Noland has sent us, which gives us a down-to-earth look at how politics in Illinois works. Jim is the owner and editor of a weekly paper, a former elected official, and an advisor to a governor or two. The weekend edition of the Chicago Tribune carried a story on the shortage of COVID-19 vaccines in the state and rural areas, with a picture of Iroquois County Public Health Nurse Bree Wells administering a shot to Gail Kaufman earlier last week. The story goes on to say that 11% of residents in the county have received first doses, and local officials said the demand far outstrips openings. At the central vaccination site at Iroquois Memorial Hospital, Chief Nursing Officer Michelle Fairley was quoted as saying the staff is working overtime to get residents in and out in 25 minutes, and the weekly supply is typically used up in 3 days. The story also said that some Chicago area residents are driving to rural areas to get vaccines, but are turned away because they don't live or work there. And now the Iroquois County COVID-19 report from the Iroquois County Department of Public Health as of February 11th. Total cases, 2,741. Confirmed cases, 2,339. Test results, 37,464. Negative, 34,723. Positive, 2,339, and deaths, 57. Of the confirmed cases, 2,646 have recovered and been released. One is hospitalized, and 37 remain isolated at home. by zip code, from February 10th will be the first figure, and the 17th will be increase or decrease or stable. Gilman, February 10th, 289. February 17th, 289, remain the same. Clifton, 256 to 257. Ashcombe, 151 to 153. Danforth, 86 to 92. Onarga, 242 to 250. Watsika, 563 to 567. Crescent City, 62 to 63. Cisna Park, 176 to 179. Thawville remained at 38. Piper City, 119 to 123. Haas will run as write-in for IW Board. Iroquois West Board of Education President Dave Haas confirmed Tuesday night he would run for re-election as a write-in for the upcoming school board election to be held this spring after first declining to file a nominating petition for the office during the filing period. There are three slots to be filled on the board, and there will be four write-ins on the ballot, including Haas. Current board member Norma Klassen has chosen not to run for re-election, while another incumbent, Tony Miller, will run again. Also on the ballot will be Robert Kramer. Write-ins will include Haas, Jacob Johnson, Jill Johnson, and Erica Walls. The board met in regular session Tuesday night, and the athletic directors at the high school and middle school, Christy Airy and Chris Kimmel, both received words of praise from their principals, Aaron Smith and Dwayne Emmon, for their efforts and work to get athletic programs and schedules back on track after being sidelined because of the current COVID restrictions. Elementary school principal Jim Harkins lauded the efforts of Paul Culkin for keeping the buses running as schedules continuously changed. In other action, the board heard Superintendent Angelo Lekas say the first day of school for the 21-22 school year, a teacher institute, would be the day after Gilman's old boys and girls reunion culminated on August 15th. There has been a donation from the Boosters for a camera for athletic events. The board appointed Amanda Tophill to coach middle school track. The board heard Lekka say that in Illinois that 53% of students are in remote learning, 38% are in a hybrid type of schedule, and 10% are in class each day. There has been a turndown in the COVID cases since the holiday break. There are 39 remote learners in the high school as of February 10th. Football practices are scheduled to start March 3rd, with the first game March 19th and ending April 24th. Boys soccer practice starts March 1st with 7 games scheduled. IW 8th graders advance in math counts competition. 4 Iroquois West 8th graders have advanced in math counts competition to the next level following a contest February 5th. Those students are Mario Andrade, Rylan Pfeiffer, Cowan Haas, and Nolan Mansky. Haas was the top individual scorer and will attend a special invitational February 25th. FFA has three section stars. FFA held section star interviews for the state FFA degree February 10th, with Iroquois West placing three section stars. Clayton Koloski is a star in agricultural placement. Rachel Ash is a Section Star Farmer, and Grace Schlieff is a Section 10 Star AG Business. Every year about this time, the Iroquois West FFA and alumni would hold their annual auction and pork chop dinner, which has been a huge success. This year they will have a pork chop and cookie drive-through to be held this Saturday at the high school starting at 4 p.m. until all the food is gone. Folks are asked to enter the high school parking lot from the north and place their order at the first gym door, then pick up the food at the second door. There is no charge, but donations will be appreciated. Danforth Historical Society. The Board of Directors of the Danforth Historical Society rescheduled its monthly meeting to Tuesday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Danforth Village Hall. In light of the remaining restrictions due to the national pandemic, at the January monthly meeting, the DHS Board of Directors rescinded the decision to hold annual meeting in spring 2020. The annual meeting will be scheduled for the fall of 2021, following the regular annual meeting schedule. The family of Terry Dowell would like to express their thanks to friends and family for the many cards, messages, and memorials received following his passing. The stories shared and kind gestures were very much appreciated. And now a column from Russ Mann. The conundrum of finding ETI, extraterrestrial intelligence. Being a Christian while having the utmost respect for the scientific community and their dedication to searching for truth, I find myself struggling in the controversy that is creation versus evolution. I believe that science and religion, while they are not likely to agree, can find common ground on the subject. That debate could reach new heights, not a pun, as mankind's insatiable appetite for knowledge and exploration further breaks the bonds of our earthly habitat. Astronomers have been searching for habitable planets in the universe for decades, in the knowledge that our sun will eventually burn out, and they're finding planets with possibilities. But don't start packing your summer spacesuit and making reservations for a flight out of the solar system just yet. Earth is expected to remain habitable for another 2.8 billion years, unless, of course, Earth's warlike inhabitants blow it up first. However, it's an inescapable fact that mankind will eventually need to find either a new place to live or simply go extinct. Researchers have found several planets that are in the comfort zone near their parent star, warm enough to have liquid water and cool enough to sustain life. There is, of course, the concern of its having an oxygen atmosphere, and then how do we manage a trip of a few thousand light years, one light year being the distance covered in 1 year at 186,000 miles a second? The next question then would be, what if someone already lives there? ABC News reported that Dan Wertheimer, director of the SETI Research Center, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, at the University of California at Berkeley, in describing the center's work, told the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology that the possibility of extraterrestrial microbial life is close to 100%. Also, the possibility that life has arisen elsewhere and perhaps evolved intelligence is plausible and warrants scientific inquiry. And then there's the possibility that alien microbial life could be something infinitely worse than coronavirus. So what if that actually happens and intelligent life is found? That could create a conundrum for biblical scholars to explain other intelligent life forms in the universe. According to conventional theology, that God created both the heavens and the earth, assuming that the heavens embodies the entire universe, wouldn't those extraterrestrial life forms have to also have been created by God, as opposed to evolving out of that alien microbial life form? Nothing of that sort was ever mentioned in the Christian Bible, the Hebrew Torah, or the Islamic Quran. Maybe the mortal authors of the Bible were not informed, or just failed to mention it. Chances are good, according to the SETI report, that finding extraterrestrial life will happen in the next 20 years. The SETI Institute is fortunately supported by private funding, and that's a good thing. There would be a challenge to its financing if it was government-supported. The Christian right in Congress could kill the research if they suspected that it would open a theological can of terrestrial worms. That other, non-God-created life may exist in the universe. And what if the inhabitants of a potential host planet have stringent immigration laws? What if they don't believe in granting sanctuary? I'm betting that if intelligent life is discovered, and they have been observing us, our wars, our social and cultural clashes, they will certainly question our level of intelligence, and at the very least, require us to leave our politics behind. In the print edition of the Gilman Star, you'll be able to see pictures of the January students of the month. They all have their masks on, I'm proud to say. IWMS names January students of the month. Pictured are winner Paige Miller, Melanie Alcantar, Emma Hargett, and AJ Rodriguez. The students pictured were recently nominated for January Student of the Month at Iroquois West Middle School. The teachers nominated students based on competitive greatness from John Wooden's Pyramid of Success. We also have Gretchen Wilms, Rylan Norton. Winner, Leah Honeycutt and Reagan Konoski. Winner, Micah Smith, Abby Kraft, David Perez, and Larkin Kopus. Nautica McNeely. And a column by Alan Weber, Trump Impeachment, the Sequel. Last week wasn't one of my best. Given my wife's recent 4-day incarceration at the Mayo Clinic, I had little to do other than seethe over absurd hospital policy and the Trump impeachment sequel. Suffice to say, it was all rather distressing. I use the term incarceration when referring to her time in the renowned infirmary because she was admitted for an emergency surgery. I rushed my wife of nearly 41 years to the emergency room on a Tuesday night, where I was then informed my services were not further needed. By the hospital, not my wife. You read that right. They admitted her for emergency surgery and promptly told me to go home. Seems they have a no-visitors policy. Obviously, Mayo is a great organization, and while I'm sure Mayo believes they have a good reason for that policy during this interminable China virus scare, the policy is inhumane and not consistent with other hospitals across the country. Separating spouses in times of emergency for any reason can in no way be considered compassionate care. Frightened and haggard faces sitting in cars in the parking lot were abundant, a sight you won't forget. There has to be a better way. So with 2 days of sitting in my car outside Mayo listening to the most sanctimonious thugs on earth feebly attempt to impeach the past president for the second time, plus another 2 days sitting alone in my home watching television while they accomplished nothing to help the American people again, I was a little short on humor. For the record, my wife did get released on Saturday and appears to be on the mend, thankfully. I had lots of well-wishers pulling for her, so how could she not? Later Saturday, Trump's not guilty verdict for supposedly inciting insurrection was decided, much to the dismay and chagrin of the Democrats, TDS sufferers, and the national media. Every Dem congressman voted guilty in lockstep, and yet no remorse was shown. Dingbat Pelosi waved her tiny little fist in the air repeatedly during the following press conference. With the television muted, it was humorous to watch. You have to hand it to Dems, they do vote like sheep. Not so much on the Republicans. Republican Senators Burr, Cassidy, Sasse, and Toomey cast their votes to impeach the former president. Burr and Cassidy were immediately censured by their state's respective Republican parties, effectively ending their political careers. This possibly sets the stage for Laura Trump, Trump's daughter-in-law, as the next North Carolina senator, giving Chuckles Schumer more to whine about. Republican in name only Senators Murkowski and Collins also voted to impeach. They have as much business being considered Republicans as boys do entering girls' restrooms. There's not much conservative about those two women. Finally, there's pouty Mitt Romney, still childishly voting against anything Trump because, well, he didn't get the Secretary of State position in the Trump administration. Mitt had a wealthy father. Didn't Trump know Mitt can be told no? Can't be told no? Pelosi and her nine lackeys failed yet again in carrying out her personal vendetta against Trump. Last time she only sent 7 managers, so evidently she figured the need to up the ante this time around with more lawyers. This time, though, she couldn't even get the constitutionally mandated Supreme Court Justice John Roberts to participate in her games. Evidently, Justice Roberts had had enough of the wasteful exercise and futility last time around, or perhaps by declining to sit through another kangaroo court, he was telling America what his thoughts were concerning Trump's guilt. Not to let something as frivolous as the United States Constitution stand in her way, Pelosi then jammed another of her lackeys, Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy, to be Trump's judge, jury, and executioner. You can't make this stuff up. And perhaps most hypocritical of all is that Pelosi's impeachment manager's lineup included David Cicilline, the former failed Providence, Rhode Island mayor, suspected of mob ties, and the China spy-seduced Eric Swalwell from California. Both seemed totally oblivious to the extra layer of duplicity they personally added to the carnival. Speaking of hypocrisy, it had been pointed out by Trump's lawyers during this impeachment circus that the charges Dems were attempting to stick Trump with had been first committed by Senators Cory Booker and John Tester, as well as Representatives Maxine Waters, Ted Lieu, Joaquin Castro, and Pelosi herself. Every one of them threatened the sitting president of the United States with bodily harm during Trump's term. All of them kept their jobs as well as their Twitter accounts. The cost of Trump impeachment part one was thought to have cost taxpayers about $3.06 million. Depending on what media source one uses, the estimated cost for sequel will probably be a little less. These figures do not include the colossal waste of time Congress spent, again, not getting anything useful done, such as China virus vaccine or financial assistance to close businesses. Windbag McConnell's speech after the vote also may have opened the door for civil Trump lawsuits, something you can bet Pelosi is looking into on our dime. This week's events serve only to reinforce my thoughts on the travesty of being led by career politicians. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Della Mae Steiner Bork, 98, of Piper City, passed away February 14th at the Piper City Rehab and Living Center. A private graveside service will be held in the near future, with a memorial service to be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to Iroquois Memorial Hospice, Piper City Rehab and Living Center, or First Presbyterian Church of Piper City. Napradenius Funeral Home in Gilman is in charge of arrangements. Please sign her guestbook at napfuneralhomes.com. Beverly J. Devine, 90, of Watseka, passed away February 14th at the Iroquois Resident Home in Watseka. Private funeral services were held February 19th at Faith Lutheran Church in Watseka. Burial followed at Oak Hill Cemetery in Watseka. Memorials may be made to Faith Lutheran Church in Watseka. Arrangements were made by the Knapp Funeral Home in Watseka. Please share a memory of Beverly at knappfuneralhomes.com. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week. We'll return now and finish with local news and opinion. Iroquois County Police reports from February 10th, Erica M. Cantu, 37, Remingston, Indiana, turned herself into the Iroquois County Jail. She was wanted on an outstanding warrant charging her with possession of a stolen motor vehicle. February 12th, Milford police arrested Anthony L. Fisk, 40, of Ashcombe, who was wanted on an outstanding out-of-county warrant for DUI and possession of cannabis. Barber scholarship applications due by May 31st, 2021. Barber scholarship applications are being received for the 21-22 school year. Applications may be obtained by contacting the Barber Scholarship Committee at the Onarga United Methodist Church by email methodistof@att.net or by posted mail OUMC 109 East Seminary Avenue, Onarga, Illinois 60955. Applications are due by May 31st, 2021, and scholarships will be awarded by July 15th, 2021. The Barber Education Trust was established in 1975 in memory of Edwin J. Barber for the purpose of assisting with the cost of tuition and fees for those persons seeking to become full-time workers in Christ's Church. We have a minimum grant amount of $500 for each scholarship awarded. In 46 years, 144 scholarship grants totaling nearly $61,877 have been awarded to those pursuing Christian service through full-time work in the church. Full-time work includes those pursuing ordained ministry, Christian education, youth ministry, or other specialized ministries within the church. This fund is designed to give preference to those persons who are from the Iroquois West School District, or who were raised in the boundaries of the Iroquois River District of the Illinois Great Rivers Conference of the United Methodist Church. Applicants are not required to be United Methodist. However, some preference will be given to those who are United Methodist. Lauren Hull and Liam Carlson were honored as recent class winners of the Iroquois SWCD Conservation Poster Contest. Aubrey Schmidt, another fourth grade winner, was absent for the photo. Wyatt Masonov, Olivia Albrecht, and Miley McGeehee were selected as best fifth grade poster contest entries. Healthy forests equal healthy communities was the theme for the Iroquois County Soil and Water Conservation District poster contest. Each year, the Iroquois SWCD sponsors the conservation poster contest for students in grades 3 through 8 who either attend an Iroquois County school or physically live in Iroquois County. SWCD directors and staff judge posters based on theme, neatness, spelling, originality, and message. One winning poster is chosen from each class that enters. For more information, contact the Iroquois SWCD at 815-432-3946, extension 3. The students were recognized in front of their fellow students and teachers. Linda Pfeiffer, Minor. Gregory James Forrest, Chicago. Susan Martin, Gilman. Larry Brian Cole, Roberts. Tracy Schumacher, Onarga. If your name appears on the birthday list, you are entitled to a free Sunday at the Gilman Dairy Queen or the Gilman McDonald's. A quarter pound of fudge from the front porch and a free movie at the Onarga Theater. Just clip and take the birthday list to the Gilman Dairy Queen, the Gilman McDonald's, the front porch, or the Onarga Theater. The Onarga American Legion Post 551 is holding a Friday, February 19th fish fry, $10 per meal, 12 and under $5, from 4:30 to 7:30 at the Legion Building on the east side of Durham Park. Fried fish, baked beans, coleslaw, fries, hush puppies, all you can eat. Drinks and carryout are available. We're looking forward to restarting our regular monthly fish fry every third Friday of the month. The Gilman Cemetery District is seeking bids for mowing the Gilman Cemetery and Wanger Green Ridge Cemetery from April 1, 2021 to March 31, 2022. Bids must be received before Friday, February 26, 2021. Send to Gilman Cemetery District, 615 South Maple Street, Gilman, Illinois, 60938. Any questions, call Sarah Earls at 815-383-4556. Leiser Furniture, Main Street, Hersher, 815-426-6100 has twin mattresses at $45 each, quilted, limit 2, and limited quantities. They also have 93 recliners in stock. Join the club, the Christmas Club. Christmas Club payments will be set up as an automatic funds transfer from any deposit account at Prospect Bank. An AFT will be issued in October of 2021 for the amount that has been deposited. Set aside up to $1,000 per month. You can save $440 for your 2021 Christmas shopping by setting aside just $40 a month. And from sports news, second half turnovers costly to IW girls at Dwight. Thursday at Donovan. Dwight 54, Iroquois West 44. The Iroquois West girls shook off a rough start, which would see them trailing host Dwight by 5 points at the end of the first quarter, leading the Trojans by 3 at the half, 32-31. But the second half was a different story. Offensively, we struggled in the second half and costly turnovers got the best of us, IW coach Christy Airy said, although the IW girls still led by 1 at the end of 3 quarters, 40-39. The Lady Trojans went on to outscore West by a 15-4 margin in the fourth quarter, where Shelby Johnson was the only IW player to score, registering all of the team's 4 points. Johnson, in fact, had a good night, hitting for 20 points, while Shea Small and Ashton Miller each had 9, Abby Coker 4, and Giselle Lopez and McKinley Tilstrick 1 each. The girls will host PBL Thursday and Tri-Point Saturday in a 10 a.m. game. Cisna Park will come to town Monday, and the girls will finish their season on the road with dates at Central on February 23rd and Moments on the 25th. This has been Tamara reading the Gilman Star. I hope to read with you again soon. Stay warm and stay healthy.